ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're the Prime Minister. What's your first move? Make Australia a green energy superpower. Fix the housing crisis. Treat mental health as a national priority. The Economy Stupid is talking about what Australia could become if we had the courage to choose it. Search for The Economy Stupid and look out for Choose Your Own Australia. Find it wherever you get your podcasts and the ABC Listen app.
Hi, I'm Tegan Taylor and this is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. It is summer on ABC Radio National, so I'm bringing you some of your favourite stories from the year gone by. Yesterday, we discussed ageing well, how to address age discrimination at work, the hunt for the elixir of youth, and the mental power of photography for older people. Today, we're continuing the discussion, turning to having more fun as you age. Coming up, what have you just stopped caring about as you gain more life experience? Wearing makeup, caring what other people think. With age comes wisdom, and for many of us, a more carefree attitude, which can be so incredibly liberating. Also, are you thinking about taking your retirement overseas? You'll hear what you need to know coming up soon here on ABC Radio National. But first, when did you peak? When I was a teenager, adults used to tell me to enjoy being young because your school years will be your best years. Luckily, my so-called best self wasn't me as an angsty teenager. When I got older, the saying went, life begins at 40. But actually, it turns out your best years may be even later than that. According to a new study, our overall mental functioning is at its highest between 55 and 60. Which is good news if the number of candles on your birthday cake is getting harder to count. You're about to hear from the man behind this research to unpack what this means, and you'll also hear from a specialist in older people's health on how to make the most of this peak. Associate Professor Gilles Gignac is the study's researcher. He's with the School of Psychological Science at the University of Western Australia. Gilles, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you very much.
So I feel like most of us think our physical peak happens in our 20s and 30s, but what did your research find about our mental peak?
Well, that's exactly right. Physical peak unquestionably is in the 20s. But when you look at the mental capacities in a broad way, so not just hardcore reasoning and memory, but other things like conscientiousness and emotional stability. So we looked at 16 different dimensions that predict important things in life. And we found that when you put it all together, you find the peak somewhere between 55 and 60.
I'm trying to think of what 16 dimensions would be. I won't get you to rattle through them, but do you think that that goes against what most people think of as in terms of like how we perform as we age?
Well, that's a good question. And certainly a lot of people are wondering about that. On the one hand, yes, because so many people are, you know, wondering about this study because people seem to peak in their natural capacities early in adult life. But when you think about terms like wisdom, most people don't think wisdom peaks in your 20s. Mm. Very few people would think that. This study is a little bit related to wisdom, but it's a little bit more focused on those dimensions in psychology that we know from a research perspective can be measured and can predict things in life, whereas wisdom is a little bit more of a broader concept. So, you know, yes and no when you think about it that way.
I suppose it reveals what we value as a society.
It's possible. I mean, it's possible. On the other hand, like one of the reasons, you know, the main reason I did this study was that we have clear evidence that people reach their peak earnings in their 50s. Mm. You do not reach peak earnings in your 20s or your 30s. You reach peak earnings in your 50s. Also, the majority of people in important complex decision-making roles like CEOs and politicians, they're not in their 20s either. They tend to be in their 50s and early 60s. And the reason the study was done was, how can we come up with a scientific explanation for that based on psychological dimensions? And like I said, when you put all of it together comprehensively, it actually supports why those people tend to be that age in those roles.
That does track. You know, you wouldn't want the president of a country necessarily to be someone in their 20s, even if perhaps they're really mentally sharp. They're just not bringing the same kind of life experience that you have by the time you get to your 50s or 60s.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one of the dimensions that people tend to peak much later in life is one that people probably haven't heard about much unless you're really into the research, and it's called sunk cost bias resistance. And what does that mean in simple terms? Your ability to cut your losses. So in life, sometimes you put time, money, and effort into a project and you realize it is not going well. And you realize there are other opportunities that you can pursue instead that are going to be better. Younger people tend to spend too much time on these bad projects and not switch early enough. Older people switch faster into these better opportunities. And my hunch is that even if you tell somebody, you know, you need to cut your losses early enough, just hearing that isn't enough. You have to experience it a few times in life before you really consolidate that experience.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor and I'm talking to Gilles Gignac, who has found that a lot of our cognitive markers peak around 60. Jim says, I'm now 82 years of age. I can say for all sorts of various complex reasons, every decade of my life has been better than the one before, and still so. Samantha says, I'm 67, so much better at not caring what other people think at all. Extremely liberating. Trevor says, I'm better at siestas. Well, Gilles, what does this research say about how we need to think about aging or older people in the workforce?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a complicated one, but I would say the majority of the evidence suggests that people who lose their jobs in their 50s seem to have a harder time getting hired again compared to people who are younger. And I think there are many reasons for why that might be the case, but one of them might be somewhat an underappreciation for what people in their mid-50s to late 50s bring to the table. And it's possible this study might help people reconsider people in their mid-50s when they're hiring people in roles. That might be something we need to rethink.
So you've looked at these 16 psychological criteria. You say on balance, most people are peaking in later life, but that later life is often when people do experience cognitive decline as well. How do these two things sit alongside each other?
Well, it's because on the one hand, like something like reasoning, undoubtedly on average, people start to decline in that as they get older. So it comes down to the fact that there are so many other dimensions that predict success in life. Like one of them is conscientiousness. So your ability to be organized and dedicated to work and interpersonal reliability. Those are very important criteria, like reasoning, yes, but conscientiousness as well. Well, conscientiousness is not peaking in 20s. They're much lower in their 20s. Once you get into your 50s and 60s, early 60s, that's when you're kind of peaking at conscientiousness. So it's not a mental capacity like an intelligence. It's a personality trait, and it's an important one. So when you put all those types of dimensions together, that's where you find the 55 to 60.
Gilles, what do you hope people take away from this work?
I suppose that behavior and thinking is complex. It's not just one dimension, like your natural capacity to reason. Decision-making is successful for a variety of reasons that are separate from reasoning and memory span. It's a broader concept than that. You know, I hope people, you know, look at the dimensions. You said 16, there's a lot of them there, and, you know, I don't want to say them right now either. I hope people will check them out and learn more about psychology and its impacts on life and how it actually impacts across the whole age spectrum.
And I'm loving your text on this as well. Andrea says, studying. I returned to study at 59 and am late into a first year of a Bachelor of Psychological Sciences. Back when I was 19, I dropped out of an arts degree to work. Never did I think I would have been able to do statistics. My whole mindset has changed and I now approach learning as a joy rather than as a chore. Another text says, at 72, I'm better at grappling, that is brown belt jiu-jitsu, much more patient, better at being kind, better at computer networking. I work full-time as a systems engineer. Well, also with me is Dr. Stephanie Ward, a geriatrician. You might recognise her voice from the ABC TV series Old People's Home for Four-Year-Olds. Stephanie, welcome to Life Matters.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So we're hearing Gilles' research talking about all of these different psychological dimensions. You say that happiness also peaks in an older age bracket.
Yes, there have been studies that have also shown that overall happiness and well-being tends to peak later in life towards that 60 to 70-year-old mark. It's not studies that I've led, but I've certainly read these studies with great excitement because some studies have shown that perhaps around our mid-40s tends to be one of our more difficult periods in our life, often involved in juggling careers, the care of children and the care of aging parents. So I think it's really exciting that there are other things to look forward to as we get older as well.
I'm interested to hear from you on how to capitalise on this peak. We hear a lot about cognitive decline and loneliness, and I don't want to diminish the fact that that's a lot of people's experience. But what I'm hearing from you and from Gilles is that it doesn't have to be like that necessarily.
Not necessarily. And I think that in order to capitalise on those increasing gains that we can make in many of our cognitive dimensions that we just heard from that research, it's looking for opportunities to leverage that. It's lucky if you can get those opportunities in the workplace. But we also know that that's not always feasible, and it can also be through family and community involvement as well. And I think that we can't diminish the fact that as we get older, sometimes the prevalence of other age-related conditions does increase, and they can impact cognitive function as well. So keeping an eye on all of the positive things we can do to keep our cognitive function as best as we can is also important, such as exercising, having a good diet, avoiding excessive alcohol, not smoking or stopping smoking, and keeping connected and keeping our brain active is all really helpful.
So protecting what you've got with those sort of healthy living techniques. One of the texts, Stephanie says, peaking between 55 and 60, exclamation marks, have they heard of menopause? I'm 57 and feel like my brain is currently mush. How do we balance what we're hearing from Gilles' work and the realities for people who especially are in that phase of life?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because our life's journeys, they're not always smooth, aren't they? And we go through these phases and these biological changes that do affect our physical, psychological and cognitive well-being. I think with respect to menopause, it's really important to be checking in with your GP around supports to ease that transition, and also to be aware that there are phases in our life that are going to be more challenging and everyone's experience is going to be different.
One of the things in the research was that emotional stability peaks in the sort of 60 and onwards phase of life. What's your read of that?
Well, I thought that was great, actually. And I think that if I were to put a lay perspective on that, I think it is around what we heard about before, that sense of wisdom and that sense of perspective and of having lived for so long, just having all of those lessons learned about times when you've been up and times when you've been down and how that's turned out, and having that longer term outlook on challenges and ups and downs in life, I think can contribute to emotional stability as well as probably some biological changes underpinning that as well. And I think that's a great thing, learning to regulate your emotions and becoming more attuned to them as you live longer with them and become more of an expert in it.
So talk to me about how ageism kind of flies in the face of some of these findings.
It certainly does, doesn't it? Ageism is a discriminatory attitude towards older people, the sense that we lose as much value as we had as we get older. And I really like that this study challenges a lot of those notions, because we do see older people in our society making such significant contributions. And I like that this study reminds us that people who hold key leadership positions, not just in corporate world, but often in political worlds as well, are of much older age, and likely because of those qualities that continue to develop over time, such as moral reasoning and conscientiousness and emotional stability. So this is a type of study that helps us to dispel some of these ageist attitudes. And I think it also speaks to how it's really important to have a mix of ages in any workplace or organisation, so you can capitalise on everybody's peak cognitive function, whether for the younger people it's that speed of learning and quick information processing, or with older people that more measured decision making. I think it's a really great advertisement for why having different people from different generations together is a great key for success.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. With me is Dr. Stephanie Ward, who's a geriatrician. You've probably seen her on Old People's Home for 4-year-olds. Jason is 55 years old and says, I get better at sharing my wisdom in the workplace and learning from my mature age friends who are more connected with the world than one might think. My 87-year-old friend says she listens to the ABC, reads newspapers every day and does crosswords. What incredible advice, Jason says, so now I've tuned in. Caroline says, I've heard that there's a saying in Japan that if you peak before you're 50, you're peaking too soon. I write it in every friend's 50th birthday card anyway. And Kate says, I'm now in my 60s. I'm better at sex, comfortable in my body, fit and confident. I know what I like and how to ask for it. So Stephanie, kind of off the back of what we're hearing people sharing, what's your advice to people on how to make the most of the parts of their mind that are doing better than it was when they were younger, and maybe not get down about the fact that sometimes your body isn't what it was when it was younger?
I think that a great piece of wisdom I once heard is that in life you might be able to have everything, but you can't have everything that you want at the same time. And I think that speaks to our cognitive and psychological strengths as well. We can't have all of the strengths that are there at the same time, and this research shows us that. So first of all, be compassionate to yourself about the things that might have changed, whether that's some physical changes, whether that is some of these cognitive changes. Dig in and lean into the strengths that you do have. This study really shows people that there's a lot to celebrate as we get older, and share the wisdom and have confidence in sharing opinions and helping to guide decision making and provide that input, particularly in scenarios dealing with younger generations. I think there's a lot of good news to celebrate with this study.
Do you think we need to change our culture in workplaces especially?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I think it might, to some extent, depend upon the type of workplace and environment in which you're in. Some workplaces already do have a lot of celebration of older leaders and older wisdom, which is a wonderful aspect. But perhaps in others that don't, then yes, I think definitely embracing the value and the perspectives of older people is something that could enhance the value and enhance the culture of a workplace, 100%.
Stephanie, Gilles, thank you both so much for joining me. Dr. Stephanie Ward is a geriatrician. You will have seen her if you've watched the ABC TV series Old People's Home for 4-year-olds. And you also heard from Associate Professor Gilles Gignac from the School of Psychological Science at the University of Western Australia. Well, stick with me here on Life Matters on ABC Radio National, because next we're talking about a very exclusive club. It is called the We Do Not Care Club, and I think you're going to want to sign up.
Christopher Skase. Remember that name? The guy of corporate Australia in the 1980s?
Skase had an aura of success.
He came with that cowboy energy.
He owned resorts, TV stations, a footy team. Skase was on top of the business world. until he wasn't.
Everything he built up, he lost.
The whole empire was built on debt.
I'm Mark Humphreys. To binge the full series now, search for ABC Rewind and look for Scase, Fall of a Tycoon on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcast.
It is no secret that as we age, our priorities shift. There are things that I felt were so important in my 20s that, quite frankly, I don't give a stuff about now. Queuing for anything, especially anything after dark or for trendy foods. No, you can keep your cronuts. I have got places to be. Also, making sure everyone I meet likes me. Who cares? Okay, maybe I do still care about that one just a little bit. But it is liberating to reach a point in life where you can shed the pointless and focus your energy on the things that really matter. And that is the central tenet of the We Do Not Care Club. It's an online movement started by US influencer Melanie Sanders that has been adopted the world over. It sees people, mostly women, going through perimenopause or in menopause, vocalizing the things they no longer care about, putting on makeup, matching socks, chin hairs. They all make the list. With me is Shelley Horton. She's a journalist, author of I'm Your Peri Godmother, and convener of the Australian chapter of the We Do Not Care Club. Shelley, are applications open?
Applications are definitely open, Tegan. It is a free club to join, and all you need to do is say what you don't care about. This is just my daily dose of joy. I think that for a lot of women, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause can be a pretty trying time, but there's also a bit of a liberation with it. As you said, cronuts, no thanks, not going to line up for that. But I have now just self-appointed myself as the Australian chapter leader of the We Do Not Care Club, endorsed by Melanie, and it is hilarious. These women have got the funniest things that they don't care about, and it's just creating this incredible sisterhood that we actually really needed.
I definitely want to hear what other people are telling you, but first I need to know from you, what do you no longer care about?
I do not care about wearing makeup when I go outside the house. Mm-hmm. I used to be the sort of person who'd put makeup on to go to the shops. Oh, no, that is not happening anymore. But I also have had some great things where I'm like, I do not care about watching TV when it is scheduled. I will watch it in my time, on catch up, including the news and things like that. So not wearing high heels. No, they're uncomfortable. They're torture devices. Why did I do that in my 20s? How did I do that? It's hilarious.
So what are the other things that people have told you? What are you like, oh, yeah, me too. I didn't even think to not care about that.
Oh, there was one hilarious one where one of Melanie's followers said, I do not care that my husband says I'm addicted to crime documentaries. And then I said, I know, that is my favorite thing to watch. Then someone else said, yes, what about, that killer, the woman who killed her husband in the 80s? We need to know what happened. Someone else then replied going, he had it coming. Then someone else replied saying, we ride at dawn. And then someone else replied going, can we make it 10:30? We're tired. It's just like this great banter.
In the true crime documentary, those texts and replies will be used as evidence. I hope you know that.
Yeah, I love that. We all think that we are detectives and that we could probably solve a case.
Yeah, don't kill your husband if you're going to talk about it on the internet first. So obviously this resonates with other people all over the world. Is there just something universal about this?
I think it's actually new. I think it is new because a lot of women have kept very quiet about the negative impacts of perimenopause and menopause and how it can make you feel quite isolated and alone. So I think there's been a bit of shame and stigma for generations before us. Now we have that Gen X generation that is going, you know what, we're going to be loud and proud about this. And there are positives to perimenopause. And part of that is that you just don't care anymore. So if, I've had people say, I think you love, dogs more than you love humans. And I'm like, That is correct. Dogs are nicer. Dogs love you unconditionally. Humans don't.
You are listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Shelley Horton, the author of I'm Your Perry Godmother and the convener of the Australian chapter of the We Do Not Care Club. Kate says, at 73, I have learnt that life is too short for blow drying, ironing, most makeup and its removal. And she says, I used to wonder why old ladies didn't just pluck out those chin hairs. Now I know it's because it's too hard to see them. Well, we've talked a lot about women so far, Shelley, but Dennis has called in. Dennis, you've stopped caring about clothes.
Well, look, the girl that just previously said she didn't care about makeup and all that, I've given that up as well. So,
good on you, Dennis.
I find makeup used to make me look fairly feminine. Now I feel like I should go to my true male identity. But yes, clothes were very, very important to me when I was younger. And when I was in my pharmaceutical job, I always looked impeccably smart in my double-breasted suits. But now I just rough about. People say, you must come down for coffee, and I go down in my trackies and sanchez, and I don't look like a dag, but I do look not like I used to look.
Oh, Dennis, I think if you look at the young fellas these days, trackies and sandshoes are the look. Thank you so much for the call.
They've gone beyond that. They're wearing thongs and shorts in the middle of winter, Tegan, and I live in Sydney and it's cold down here.
Well, Dennis, I will never catch you in thongs and shorts. You've got to draw the line somewhere, but it's good to know that you don't care about the double-breasted suit jackets anymore. Also on the text line, Paul in Sydney says, I've stopped caring about having every single ingredient in a recipe. What was I thinking? So, Shelley, I've got to ask you, is this a No Boys Allowed club? Because it sounds like Dennis and Paul want to be part of it.
Look, I am surprised that Dennis and Paul want to join in. Of course they want to join in because this is simply letting go and just having fun. So you know what? I'm not going to ban them, but I am going to say that we do have a real sisterhood in this club because there are some women who are struggling, and I am getting messages from women in Nigeria, and I got a message from someone from the south of France. Like, this is really a worldwide movement, and I really think that just knowing that you're not alone going through the hormonal chaos of perimenopause is something that's really bonding, and that we can support each other and love each other and have a laugh, because sometimes when you've been searching around your house for your phone while you're on your phone, that's something that we can all have a laugh about. When we do the videos for We Don't Care Club, the most common thing is that people who do videos will have a pair of glasses on their face, a pair of glasses on their head, and a pair of glasses tucked into their shirt, and we're still looking for our glasses. You know, there's all of that sort of thing. So we don't care that we're a bit of a hot mess. We're going to poke fun at ourselves and make sure that everyone feels that we don't need to live up to those perfect standards anymore. We can actually just be ourselves.
Oh, if one pair of glasses is stylish, three pairs of glasses must be off the charts.
It's a little excessive, but I have the same thing. We don't care that we now keep tweezers for those chin hairs in the lounge room, in the kitchen, in our desk, and then also in the car, because that's the best place to see them.
That's what the rearview mirror is for, I think. Emma, you've stopped caring about other people who seem to have the perfect life.
Yes, or posturing to me that, yeah, I've got less self-doubt, but I need to go with it. I think it is a new thing that people are talking like this. I think it's because we don't have open speech as we used to have, where there's more conservative views acting as if it's the new normal.
And social media is really where people are kind of putting out those perfect selves. Emma, thank you so much for the call. Anne, you've given up on finishing books.
Yeah, I used to feel I had to finish a book if I'd started it, but now, Tegan, so many books, so little time.
Life's too short. And thanks for the call. Well, Shelley, you've just written a book called
Yes,
I'm Your Perry Godmother. I think you hope that Anne finishes that one. Tell me about the book.
So I had a pretty terrible time with my perimenopause, and part of it was because of the shame and silence. So when I went into perimenopause at 45, I'd never even heard the word before. So there's been a real change over this past 5 years of women speaking out. And so I go through tell my story, but I have evidence-based advice and world-leading menopause experts who are in my book. And the good thing is it's not all doom and gloom. We end with menopausal zest, which is exactly sums up We Do Not Care Club. It is when you no longer care and you actually value yourself and don't wait for other people to value you. And it's a pretty powerful place for women to get to. And I think this is where we need to know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel for perimenopause, and it's all going to be okay. We're going to get through it, and then we'll have the menopausal zest on the other side.
Yes, for the zest. One person says on the text line, I don't care that my undies are practical rather than aesthetic. Makeup, heels, gone decades ago. Catherine, you've learnt that not everyone has to like you, you and me both.
Oh, hello. Yes. Look, I've been on a journey, and I'm probably guilty of being a people pleaser. And, you know, coming into my 40s, it's been very liberating to say, you know what, not everybody has to like me. That's okay. I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and I can hold my own opinions, and people can handle not agreeing with me. That's fine. And look, I just had to have a little giggle when your guest said we keep our tweezers everywhere, including the car, because I look down to see there are my tweezers. And when I stop at the light, I do use the rear view mirror to do a little bit of a touch up. So that really gave me a good giggle.
Well, Catherine, you are my cup of tea and I do like you. Thank you so much for calling in. Shelley, tell me about this sense of freedom of not caring if people like you anymore, because that is a really unfamiliar feeling to me, but I'm getting used to it.
Yeah, so a lot of the women in the We Do Not Care Club are saying things like, we do not care if you gave us a last-minute invitation to that party. We prefer to stay at home and watch TV. So it's instead of the people-pleasing of like, oh, I should do that, it's actually doing what you want to do. It's also just going that, yeah, you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. Let's be a few people's shot of whiskey instead, because that's a hell of a lot more fun. And I just love this because it's even things down to, you know, having to cook for the kids every night of the week and getting home, you've done the groceries and you're just too tired to shop, so you order Uber Eats and you just don't care anymore that everyone's, you know, expecting you to cook dinner.
On the text line, Mark says, caring less as women age is the call of the archetype of the crone, a woman who yes. fears wildness. She references Jung and the mythologist Joseph Campbell talking about this shift. She said, well, she's in her 70s now, but she felt the call of the crone in her late 40s. My life as a crone is powerful. I dream of living in a log cabin in the wilderness and having people think I'm a witch, whether I am or not. It's up for you to decide.
Look, I don't think we have to go for the full wilderness in a witch, you know, and being called a witch. But you know what we can do? We can be the wise women, the women who have lived there and know that things like office gossip are just not important, that it's actually your values and the important things that, you know, shape who you are and shape your future. Because the thing is, when you're going through perimenopause or menopause, that is midlife. That's not the end of your life. So you are now making changes to set yourself up for a happy rest of your life. And that could be 30 to 50 years.
The thing, I want to dig into this a little bit, because that idea of wisdom, of perhaps being a resource for the people around you, we've had a lot of fun talking about all things we don't care about, but how do you communicate to the people around them that it's not that you don't care about them, it's that you don't care about all the other stuff?
It is exactly that. It's the stuff and the noise and the little things. It's about caring about the big things and making sure that you do spend time and nurture those big things. So it's very flippant to say we do not care about anything. In fact, we care deeply about a lot of things, but we're just going to let go of the things that don't serve us anymore. And when it comes to things like younger women approaching us at work, this is where we have so much advice and mentorship and incredible knowledge that we can share. And I think part of this comes from the fact that we used to, you know, live in villages where the wise women were the ones that you would go to for advice, and we don't really have that anymore. So I think we've got a new generation going, we're going to reclaim some of that.
Yeah. Do you think it's something that we used to sort of treasure in our communities a long time ago that we've lost because we lift up youthfulness so much in our modern society?
I think that there is that beauty standard and a bit of an anti-aging feeling. And now what we are looking at is more that aging is a privilege. We are lucky to be here and we want to live well and have that longevity and a healthy aging, not, you know, shriveling up and disappearing. So I think this is also about women not becoming invisible after 50, but in fact, stepping into their power and making sure they take up space. And I absolutely love that.
You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Shelley Horton, author of I'm Your Perry Godmother and the proud unofficial, kind of official-ish convener of the Australian chapter of the We Do Not Care Club. Very much the theme of this chat has been about perimenopause, menopause. But on the text line, Lauren says, you don't need to wait till perimenopause. After a pretty rough time in my 20s, I learned I don't have the time or the mental space for people who don't bring me joy in life. At 32, my social circle is small, but I never have to be anything other than my full self, and I am happy. Yeah, you don't have to age into this club, Shelley. You can just join it whenever you want.
That is actually inspiring to me. I don't think I had, the foresight to think like that when I was that young. I'm 52 now, so I'm sort of through it. But I love that younger generations are thinking that way, and good on them. Let's encourage it.
So if someone is, I don't care, curious, but wanting to let go of this should mentality.
A lot of shoulding.
How do you come towards this?
Look, this is very much a social media trend at the moment. So what you should do is go on to Instagram or TikTok and look up We Do Not Care Club. You can follow me, Shelley Horton 1. I put up at least weekly, sometimes twice a week. And I can tell you that it will just give you a snort laugh, you know, one of those laughs where it gets into the little bit of the ugly laugh, because we don't care about doing polite laughing anymore. And I think that there's actually so much fun, but there's pearls of wisdom in there as well. So getting rid of the shoulding, what I should do, let's lean into what I want to do and what actually makes me happy.
Journalist Shelley Horton is author of I'm Your Perry Godmother and convener of the Australian chapter of the We Do Not Care Club. Next up here on Life Matters, the good retirement and seeing the world. Here's what you need to know. Years, decades even before we retire, we start to dream of all the places we could go. Sights never seen, places never been. The world is a retiree's oyster. It's an exciting time filled with the thrill of finally doing something that you've been waiting for a really long time. But the practicalities of travelling in retirement require a decent amount of preparation. Are you fit and healthy enough to travel? What happens if you get sick? Today, you'll hear from a retired couple who have been travelling around Australia and soon plan to relocate overseas, as well as two experts who'll share what you need to think about before you go anywhere. Roz and Steve Guggenberger were well-travelled before they met and married in their 30s. The couple worked in Canberra, Roz as a personal assistant and Steve in IT, while continuing to travel as often as they could. They're joining me now. Roz and Steve, welcome.
Hello, Tegan.
Hello.
You're both 1 week away from returning to your home in Hervey Bay. Can you give me a sense of where you've been travelling most recently?
We've only had a short trip, this one. We've got a big fifth wheeler and it's very comfortable. And we've just done a little trip around sort of Birrabarra and inland a little bit west. And so this one's just been a short trip because we haven't been in it since August last year. So we sort of figure we need to get back and make sure we know how to do it all.
Because you've done some bigger trips in this same van, haven't you?
Yes, a couple of years ago we went out west to Longreach and this trip started because we, you know, had a Citroen get-together in Maryborough and we just continued on the road from there, yes.
Because another thing we've got is a little yellow 2CV Citroën, and Citroëns came from all over Australia and gathered in Maryborough, so we joined them.
That's so cute. They're such cute little cars. I'd love to see them en masse. You've got a big year of travelling ahead of you this year. What have you got planned?
We do. We're actually just back for a short while at Hervey Bay before we get organised, and we're off to Canada and Alaska to do a couple of cruises, and then we're actually cruising back to Australia from Hawaii because we do tend to like cruises.
And before that, like early in January, February this year, we were in Cambodia, so Siem Reap, and we really loved it. So we'll probably mention that a bit more. Yeah,
let's talk about Cambodia because this is more than just a trip you've got planned there.
It is. Look, we went up there. I actually came out of the blue. I saw an ad on Facebook for this concept, which an English guy and his father have built an apartment building in Siem Reap. It's called Sullivan Retirement Residence. And he offered a come and stay with us and see what you think of it deal. And we thought, this is too good to be true. So we did that for 2 weeks in February and loved it.
I'll just add that. The two-week deal is to come and try it, and that was for free. And he has supplies a driver, and you got this accommodation, and it's just too good to be true. Yeah,
because their idea is it's a big step for everybody, and to hear about it and look at it, pictures on a website's one thing, but to actually go and see it in the flesh, and you get the idea. Is it for me or maybe not?
So you're going to retire to Cambodia.
That's one of the plans. Look, I don't know that we're going to be there full time. We probably will keep our place in Hervey Bay as well and sort of alternate between the two.
Because I think what his plan is, you don't actually buy into the place. You just pay a monthly rental. And if you don't like it after 6 months, all you've got to do is give him 2 months' notice and you can come back either to our home in Hervey Bay, or you can go somewhere else.
So the appeal of something like Cambodia, I'm imagining, is that you get, for a very low cost, quite a luxurious way of life. But I might come to Chris Geis, who's the Chief Executive of National Seniors Australia, who also runs National Seniors Travel. Chris, welcome to Life Matters on Radio National.
Hi, Tegan. Good to be with you.
So there's lots of practicalities to consider when you're a retiree setting off on an adventure. When you're speaking to the seniors that you work with, what are some of the classic things that people underestimate about travelling?
I guess as people age, health does become a consideration. And so I guess good planning in regards to health concerns needs to be addressed. So whether that's you're just travelling for, let's say you're going to Canada or you're going to Asia or you're going to Europe, you should have a plan for that. Or whether you're looking at like what Ros and Steve are considering, where they're looking at something a lot more long-term, you need to sort of look at, well, what are the local health arrangements and are there reciprocal health arrangements with the Australian government? And what's the plan if, pardon me, in the worst-case scenario, if you had to repatriate back to Australia, how would you manage that?
So what sort of practical tips do you give in terms of if you've got an ongoing chronic condition, you're living with a disability, what sort of things do people need to think about before they book that plane ticket?
I guess most importantly is understand that whilst there are a number of countries around the world that have reciprocal health arrangements with the Australian government, there's about 11 countries, and probably the most well-known are New Zealand and the UK. But there are other countries that have this, where they look after emergency care, hospital care, those sorts of things. But you've got to have a plan to get home. And that's why having travel insurance is incredibly important. And most importantly, you need to make sure that you're protected for pre-existing conditions. So we find a lot of circumstances where the question will be asked around, do you have any pre-existing conditions? And someone will say, oh, no, I'm in perfect health. And then you sort of ask a few more questions around, oh, are you on warfarin or anything like that? Oh, yes, I've got that. It's because they're on medication, they have the perspective that I don't have any health concerns because I'm feeling fit. It's the medicines that are keeping you well. But very important from the point of view of disclosure perspective to make sure that you have that conversation with your travel insurer to disclose it so that you're well and truly protected when you go overseas.
You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, and today we're talking about travel. Chris Geis is with National Seniors Australia. Chris, we just heard from Ros and Steve before that people are considering a more permanent move overseas where the cost of living is much less less expensive. Is this a trend that you're seeing broadly with Australian retirees?
Yeah, I guess that we are, and it's for two reasons. I guess there's a cost factor, and also there's this is a poor expression, but there's the romance, I suppose, of a foreign land sort of to live out your retirement era. But I guess probably it's a little bit of also an indictment of what's happening with the aged care system in Australia. And because of the challenges around workforce numbers and basically being able to get packages in Australia, government-funded packages, that there are challenges that people are sort of looking, okay, are there alternatives that maybe I can tap into? And in particular, Asia tends to be. We're seeing a lot more in Thailand, for example, where they are sort of positioned as more resort-like, but they are supported. Whilst they are resorts, they are also supported by care, and in particular, that they're now addressing, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's and those sorts of things as well.
It sounds like it really a real kind of dial shift in terms of affordability for people. I suppose we could talk at length about what it means to sort of export our people to Southeast Asia for that sort of care. But in terms of the system that we currently have in Australia with pensions and Medicare and that sort of thing, if you are thinking of moving overseas to somewhere less expensive, what sort of considerations are there?
Yeah, you're right, Tegan. That point should be made is that, you know, we're exporting, part of our issues in Australia to other countries and putting their own systems under pressure. So that's one issue by itself. But importantly, we need to make sure that, that people are going into this process well rehearsed as to what to do, how it actually works, and always take into account the what ifs. That's incredibly important because, sort of just relying on someone else, the government will support me. The government will repatriate me back to Australia. No. And in particular, I guess from July, when we've got the new aged care system kicking in, and that will require whether pensioners, part pensioners or self-funded retirees, there is more contribution on the individual personally from a financial perspective to pay for their own care. And so you can sort of understand, well, if I'm paying my own care locally, are there options for me in another land that maybe could they provide in their mind a better care? So it's going to be interesting as we move forward, sort of thing, as to as people choose, what will they choose? Choose local or overseas?
This is Life Matters on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, and I've been asking you about whether you've travelled in retirement and if it lived up to your expectations. One says microtourism within a few kilometres of home. Walking, cycling, etc., and gardening. So much to notice, including gradual change. Dean says, these people are loaded. How about speaking to a lifelong renter instead of a lifelong landlord? We aren't all so well healed. Sue says, similarly, all these trips cost money. They're not reachable for many. Perhaps microtourism is an alternative there, but it's not the same as going overseas. I want to bring in Jill Weeks, who's authored and co-authored three books on retirement, 21 Ways to Retire, Where to Retire in Australia, and Retire Busy. Jill, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Tegan.
When it comes to travel, what are most people looking to get out of it? Is it always just about going somewhere new?
It's not always. I think in the past you could say, look, we're going overseas on a tour, or we're going a lap of Australia in the caravan, or that sort of thing. But it's a very diverse group, I'd say, retirees, because you've got, of course, people who just love the caravan and, you know, off they go. And I know that a few years ago, about 3 years ago or so, there was a registration of caravans that reached almost 700,000 in Australia. So you wonder how many of those are the retirees. But also, it's not just caravans, it's the cruises, for example, or the blue nomads, some of them are called, because they just keep going on numerous cruises all over the place. you've got people who go and work, for example. You know, I met a couple in Mackay who'd gone out to a station. Well, their kids actually found them the job. Hey, mum and dad, get out of retirement, go and do this. They went out to a cattle station, I think it was, out in the middle of Queensland, and worked for 6 months. And she was an ex-teacher, so she tutored, and he was I forget what he worked in, transport, I think, and he was the handyman, and they loved it so much. They got home, and the station owner, you know, 4 hours down the track, rang and said, hey, can we book you for next year? You know, trying to gazump them from their previous role. So there's people who work there, and as Roz and Steve were saying about going overseas, people go and do voluntary work, of course. One of the great voluntary ideas of travelling in Australia is actually in Kimber in South Australia, which is, I suppose it's about 200 kilometres from Port Lincoln, or the middle place between Perth and Sydney, and you can get a free camp there if you would like to do some volunteering there. So they give you free camp, and I think it's free electricity as well, and they want your skills and interests, and you can, for example, they've got people who've painted street furniture, done data entry, been judges at the local show, and helped restore engines, you name it, you know, just for something to do. And I guess it's a bit of a brag factor. I did this in Kimber, or I helped the town as well. And then you've got, you know, a lot of people who like the adventure. Let's just go and do something. And often you'll find these people are on small tours, or maybe solo travellers themselves. So it's very much different. I found a vehicle the other day that had a big sign, and it was called Research Development Vehicle into Ski, Spending the Kids' Inheritance.
Jill, what I'm hearing, like, obviously there's people spending the kids' inheritance, literally, but we did have a few people texting there saying, oh, these all sound so expensive. What I'm hearing from you is it doesn't have to be hugely expensive to be able to get out and see Australia.
No. And I'm not sure if it's still available, but there used to be a scheme in Western Australia called the Outback Helpers Scheme, where you would go and travel and, you know, help out on these huge stations, much like the couple from Mackay. And so sometimes these are paid, sometimes it's more voluntary. So there's different ways. And, of course, people like to house sit, for example. People do home exchanges. There may be something that, you know, you can utilise your ability. I've met a couple from who actually did the Kimber experience, and she said, look, we just go and babysit caravan parks. You know, owners just want a little bit of time off, or they go into a cafe, do you need some help, we need some cash, you know, they do that sort of thing. So you know, there's huge ways of getting around it, I suppose. But look, it can be very expensive. You look at some of the cruises, you look at some of the tours you can do, it's quite interesting. I even came across one man who has coined the term fruising, which means he cruises on freighters.
So instead
of, yeah, he goes to a freighting company, a ship, you know, obviously, and there are people that actually go and cruise on freighters. There are a few problems with that in terms of, well, when the captain says get off, I think it's the last port that they go to, you must get off, and it's not like you're sort of lying back with a cocktail all day every day. But he said it was fantastic. He loved reading his books, he loved looking at the ocean. He said the only problem was climbing so many sets of stairs to get to the dining room.
There's not as many buffets and water slides on freighters as there is on those big cruise liners, but it does sound good. Jill, thanks for the insights there. Chris, I'd love to come back to you just for some sort of parting wisdom, I suppose, for people who are going, yes, I want to travel, this sounds like me. One person's texted in saying, good travel insurance is paramount. Moving to Asia for aged care, there are many considerations, including Centrelink, if you're receiving their aged care pension. What sort of things should be on people's to checklist before they embark on a trip like this?
Yeah, I guess importantly, if there is some sort of government benefit applicable, that you know, basically, if you're going longer than 6 weeks, you need to have a conversation with Services Australia or Centrelink. That's pretty important. But I think probably the most important thing is, tying back to that health situation, is just make sure that you're match fit. So the thing is, if you're expecting to do, you know, walking for, you know, 14 hours a day, and you're going to be sort of experiencing great journeys across the world, and you don't do that in your normal life, you know, be prepared that you might be under a little bit of discomfort. So you need to prepare for these things and make sure that, you know, like if there's medication or anything, you just need to be prepared and sort of, you are away from your home base for a significant period of time. So just be prepared for those sorts of things. Really important. And also, yeah, that travel insurance, critically important. But also, because you're away from your home base, remember the risky behaviours. So things like, for example, you know, alcohol, mopeds, motorcycles, you know, that you wouldn't ride a moped without a helmet in Australia. So why would you do that in Asia? You know, it's sort of because you're on holiday. That doesn't mean to say that you need to sort of just forget about the normal behaviours that you otherwise would, you know, do in Australia sort of thing.
Thank you, Chris Grice, Chief Executive of National Seniors Australia. You also heard from Jill Weeks, author of 21 Ways to Retire, and retiree travellers Roz and Steve Guggenberger. Well, that's it for Life Matters today on ABC Radio National, coming to you from Jagera and Turrbal Land. Today's show is all about ageing well, something we're often thinking about at this time of year as we're heading into another trip around the sun. Tomorrow's show will be all about travel. From all of the team at Life Matters, I hope you have a safe and relaxing New Year's Eve tomorrow. You can catch any of our stories on the ABC Listen app. I'll catch you again tomorrow.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.